5:30? I don't get an answer.
The Environment Finance Conference Committee will come to order. Okay, we are on Senator Dill's motion. And I had promised that we would have very brief testimony on this issue. Do we have the people here?
Yes.
Okay. I had asked for one person on each side of the Manitoba Hydro issue to speak for 5 minutes maximum. So we can keep the discussion at a minimum. As the Senate doesn't have a position on this, we need to at least have a brief amount of testimony.
Madam Chair.
Representative Dill.
For the moment, until we've heard the testimony, I'd like to withdraw my amendment.
Okay. Representative
Dill. Once we've heard all of that, then if I feel compelled, we'll...
You can always have that option. So Representative Dill withdraws his motion. Who would like to come first? Mr. Bradley, are you testifying on behalf of the language?
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Ken Bradley, Senior Policy Associate with Fresh Energy, and I'm here obviously to speak in favor of the amendment to Senate File 2096 that requires Xcel Energy to include the following information in its resource plan when they purchase electricity from Manitoba Hydro, basically related to the Northern Flood Agreement. Medium household income, number of residents employed full-time and part-time, number of outstanding claims against Manitoba Hydro by individuals and communities, and the number of claims settled by Manitoba Hydro, and the amount of shoreline damage, flooding, erosion, and the amount of shoreline restored and cleaned. And I just want to state that the reason this amendment was drawn up was Mr. Eloff was kind enough to put the language together, and really what it is off of what the Public Utilities Commission's own legal staff had suggested to the commission. And they had suggested that after Xcel Energy, after a very kind of contentious issue, it went to a contested case hearing related to the Pimichickamack Cree related to this resource. That eventually went to the State Court of Appeals. And at the State Court of Appeals, Xcel Energy argued that they didn't want to have a contested case hearing, and Manitoba Hydro argued that. But in replacement of that, that monitoring reporting the NFA was the appropriate process. Xcel had agreed to do that in their resource plan. They then went back to the commission, and Manitoba Hydro both argued to have that taken out after it went to the State Court of Appeals. Although the commission didn't agree to keep monitoring reporting in themselves, their staff recommended that it be included. And it is widely agreed that implementation of the Northern Flood Agreement between the parties is the proper form of resolution of all matters of impact with Northern Hydropower on affected Indigenous communities. There is no reason that this amendment would insert Minnesota into ongoing implementation of the NFA within Canada, nor is there any reason that the amendment should inhibit trade of electricity. On the contrary, this amendment is consistent with Minnesota law and gives Minnesota consumers of electricity, utility regulators, and utilities themselves valuable information that will reduce prior controversies regarding this hydropower. We're hoping that what this amendment will do is put away the controversy that's been related to it. That's what our organization is hoping. According to Minnesota law, utilities must consider environmental and socioeconomic impacts. Most energy production under 216-242 subdivision 3, based on this law, the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission, in its order issued March 18, 2003, this is what the commission stated. The commission, therefore, has an interest in the NFA and ongoing ability of parties to use the treaty and related processes to address environmental and socioeconomic harms related to Manitoba Hydro. That was related to contested case hearing that eventually went to the state Supreme Court. During that process, Xcel was asked to, by order by the PUC, and what it stated was Xcel shall monitor and report the status of ongoing implementation of the NFA in its resource plan. They've subsequently, Fresh Energy, at the time we were ME3 and the University of Minnesota Human Rights Center, recommended the PUC track over time key indicators to allow the assessment of the NFA. We submitted a report, as well as numerous other organizations, displaced residents of South Indian Lake, and other folks as well submitted information about this, and the commission then decided on these provisions Public Utilities Commission staff did, and recommended to PUC that monitoring reporting method should be adopted and that such proposed be this amendment. The commission staff stated it should not have proven difficult or burdensome to Xcel Energy to have provided specific monitoring on the status of these issues. If clear and specific method of reporting these data had been developed from the start, much of the difficulty and confusion evident in Xcel's report would have been avoided. Parties recommended a systematic analysis over time of key indicators to allow the assessment of the end-of-phase implementation. Collecting data and organized systematically will make it possible for Minnesota consumers and other interested stakeholders to determine whether desired results of NFA as an appropriate mechanism for internalizing the socioeconomic environmental costs of hydroelectric development are being achieved. You know, it is widely understood that the Northern Flood Agreement is the agreement that and mechanism that resolves issues in Canada. And what the amendment does is really monitor and report articles under the NFA, and all of this information should be easily and readily available to the company, to Xcel Energy, and in our minds should hopefully put this away. I think we all understand that hydropower is probably going to be in more demand, and Manitoba Hydro themselves have talked about building more dams. We don't believe that this resource is going away or we should stop purchasing it. What we believe is that we need to have some type of transparency related to this issue, some monitoring, just to see on the past issues and problems related, are they being resolved? If they are, that is what we should hope for, and that should be done through these Canadian mechanisms. And so I would ask that members support this language, and I would hope it would end up in the final bill. I think it's important. This issue has been very controversial. There's been a documentary made about it. And just on April 16th, the most recent news I have, and I've read hundreds of articles of this controversy, the CBC reported that basically one of the bands had taken over one of the hydro-generating stations. Imagine in Minnesota if someone had taken over New Prairie Island or taken over. I mean, there's a lot of controversy over this generation, and what we want to do is get past that controversy and have some transparency on our side of the border that can help to resolve those issues.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Bradley. Are there questions? Okay. Thank you for being succinct. Welcome back.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Rick Evans. I'm with Xcel Energy. Madam Chair, I guess we had not understood it was one person on each side, and Xcel Energy and the Manitoba Hydro people do have a little different point of view on this, and if I can be less than 5 minutes.
You share your 5 minutes, that's fine.
Okay, thank you. This is a dispute, apparently, between some Canadian citizens, Canadian First Nations, the Canadian government, a Canadian company called Manitoba Hydro. Our problem from Xcel Energy's point of view with this language is that we have no ability. We are not a Canadian citizen. We don't do business in Canada. We don't have service territory in Canada. We have no greater ability than anybody else to go acquire this information. What was found in all of the things that Mr. Bradley were talking about in the PUC and in the Court of Appeals, this was very contentious. There was an enormous amount of testimony. There was a lot of conversation about what could be provided. The bottom line was the PUC recognized that Xcel Energy has no ability to go up and find out what the average income is of the First Nations that live around these projects. We have no ability to go up there and do surveys of land. We have no ability to go up there and figure out how much shoreline has been reclaimed, and we don't have any ability to go up and find out what the nature of Canadian claims are. These are all in Canadian courts. This may be good information. It may be information that you all want to have, and it may be information that Mr. Bradley and his group want to have, but what we don't understand, this law simply says Xcel Energy will provide the information, but it doesn't provide us with any tools to get the information or any suggestion as to how we're supposed to go and acquire it. So our point of view on the language is, you know, let us know what you want us to do. If you want us to not buy Manitoba Hydro and go find another way to get 500 megawatts of baseload energy, I guess we can go do that. I don't think that's the policy that Minnesota wants to follow. If you want us to try to ask for the information, we'd be happy to do that. But to pass a law that says we shall provide information that we don't have, that is in another country, where we are not a citizen, we think is not advancing the ball in this dispute that appears to be going on up in Canada.
So Mr. Evans, if we amended this to say that XL should ask Manitoba Hydro to provide this information to XL, and then XL should provide it to the public in Minnesota, you wouldn't object to that?
That would be acceptable, certainly.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? Senator Chaudhry, hang on, please. And then we'll bring up, you have someone from Manitoba Hydro to speak.
Well, I don't, but Manitoba does.
Senator Chaudhry.
Madam Chair, has the PUC ordered XL to monitor and report on the status of the ongoing implementation of the Northern Flood Agreement in its next resource plan? Did it order that in 2001?
Yes, it did,
Senator. And did XL do that?
Madam Chair, Senator Chaudhry, yes, we did.
You monitored and reported on the status of the ongoing implementation of NFA?
To the best of our ability to do so, yes.
So, Madam Chair, you are able to get information about the NFA and its implementation.
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Chaudhry, we were able to get the information that we could acquire. What the PUC ultimately determined was that we had no particular ability to get that information, and they had nothing particular to do with it. So I can get you a copy of what we provided. I understand it was quite extensive, but what we did not have was per capita income of the. I mean, this is very specific information that's asked for in this law, and that's the information that we have no particular ability to get. It's possible if we ask them for it, they'll give it to us. I'm told that's not the case, but I.
Madam Chair, did the PUC say that it should not be difficult or burdensome for XL to provide specific monitoring on the status of issues?
Well, I heard Mr. Bradley say that. I don't know what he was reading from, whether that was from the staff report or whether that was from the PUC.
Staff briefing papers, 2006.
Madam Chair, Senator Chaudhry, and my understanding was that the PUC did not agree with the staff. I'm not sure if they didn't agree specifically with that conclusion, but they didn't agree ultimately with the conclusion.
So, yes, Madam Chair, you want to do what the PUC says, right?
Absolutely.
All right. And state law says that we have a interest in socioeconomic harms, right?
Madam Chair, Senator Chaudhry, I believe so, yes.
And the PUC told XL to monitor and report on the status of the NFA, right?
Madam Chair, Senator Chaudhry, yes.
But at the same time, XL disagrees that it can achieve that goal.
Madam Chair, Senator Chaudhry, there's really, you're asking two different questions. We can acquire whatever information we can acquire about the status of the report. This law we're talking about today asks us for some very specific information, and that is what we don't believe, we don't have it. We know that. We would have to go get it somewhere, and we have no idea whether we can acquire it.
Chair, why not? Why can't you just go to Canada and look it up in a library somewhere?
Street corner.
In Canada. Just go there and ask, or ask, go and study, go to the tribal reservation and study the per capita income.
Madam Chair,
tell me it's not reported somewhere in Canada.
Mr. Evans.
Madam Chair, Senator Chaudhry, I guess I assume if the information was that easy to acquire, Mr. Bradley would go get it himself. I assume there's some difficulty in getting it, which is why he's asking us or having the law require us to report it.
Madam Chair, why are you concerned about what Mr. Bradley's doing? It says here that the law says you need to be doing it.
Madam Chair, Senator Chaudhry, I understand that. I guess what I'm saying, you asked me why we didn't go look it up in a library, and I said I assume that if it were that easily acquired, they wouldn't need a law to require us to go get it.
So, Madam Chair, have you tried that then? Did it not work?
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Chaudhry, we haven't been under a requirement to do it before.
Madam Chair, you said that what you were asked to do was not possible or difficult, and what you're telling me now is that you haven't even tried.
Madam Chair, Senator Chaudhry, what I told you was we did not have this information available to us. What I've been told is it will not be readily available to us. Our concern with the law is that the law doesn't recognize the possibility that the information is not readily available. And so our question would be, what should we do then? If the law were to say we should take reasonable efforts to acquire this information, we can take reasonable efforts. If the law said we should ask Manitoba Hydro for it, we can ask Manitoba Hydro for it. But that's not what the law says. The law says we'll provide this information without a recognition of the fact that we may not have the information. It may not be available to us.
So
I don't understand, Madam Chair. You haven't even cited any attempts at acquiring the information. I think if you had told us, well, we asked government, we asked the tribe, we asked the university, we asked the equivalent of the Canadian Federal Reserve, then I guess I can understand what you're saying, but I don't understand. You're telling me you haven't even tried.
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Chaudhry, we're not currently under an obligation to provide this information. There was a time when we were requested to provide information, and we did provide significant information. Part of the difficulty we have here is that this amendment was brought up on the floor of the House, was not heard in committee, when there might have been an opportunity for us to bring forward the people who actually put the report together and that sort of thing. But that opportunity was not afforded, and so I'm in a little bit of a disadvantage here. What I'm trying to say in my testimony today is that to require us to provide information that we do not have without a recognition of the fact that we may not be able to get it is not particularly helpful, I think, to the goal that we're trying to achieve here.
So, Mr. Evans, I think I also heard you say that you're willing to make reasonable efforts to get this information, but that an absolute requirement creates problems.
Madam Chair, yes.
Thank you very much. All right. Thank you for your testimony. Okay, 2 minutes from Manitoba Hydro, and we really don't have an awful lot more time to spend on this issue, members, I'm afraid. This is not the policy committee. Mr. Swanson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Eric Swanson from Winthrop & Weinstein. We represent Manitoba Hydro. And I appreciate the 2 minutes, and I'll try to keep it to that. Manitoba Hydro has had a decades-long relationship with Minnesota, with Minnesota Utilities, trading electricity both to and from Manitoba and Minnesota. We think it's been beneficial to both sides over the years. This has been the topics you're discussing this evening have been the subject of lengthy and very, very vigorous debates. I've been involved for the past 8 years in those debates. Those debates have gone up to the Court of Appeals, where the court said, and I'll quote, Manitoba Hydro is a Canadian project located in Canada involving Canadian waters and Canadian Indian tribes. The project is approximately 40 years old, contains a lengthy agreement, that's the Northern Flood Agreement that's been discussed, detailing rights and obligations of all parties, and contains arbitration provisions carefully setting out the settlement of grievances. The court concluded saying, we decline to become entangled in Canadian disputes. Madam Chair and members, I can only speak for Manitoba Hydro this evening. I know the committee has also heard from the Premier of Manitoba, who offered to bring a delegation down to address members to the extent there are concerns. I know you've heard from the Consul General on behalf of the National Government of Canada. I know you've heard from one of our First Nation partners, TCN, who's exploring a project together with Manitoba Hydro going forward. one of our First Nation partners, Tatasquehec Cree Nation, indicated that they had concerns because they felt this amendment could actually harm some of the progress that's being made. And we would simply join our First Nation partners and the governmental representatives in asking you not to become part of this ongoing dispute. That's all I have, Madam Chair. Thank you for the opportunity.
Questions? Senator Chaudhry.
Madam Chair, I apologize for forgetting your name.
Senator Chaudhry, Eric Swanson.
Swanson. Mr. Swanson, does Manitoba Hydro understand that Minnesota law requires consideration of environmental and socioeconomic impacts of its electric generation?
Madam Chair, Senator, certainly Minnesota law does require the regulated utilities such as XL, when they're making resource plan decisions, to discuss the environmental and socioeconomic impacts. And one of the things that came out in the Public Utilities Commission proceedings was the Northern Flood Agreement, its existence, its provisions, and the commission actually found it was a unique agreement in that regard, in that it internalized those costs in a way that no other energy source that Minnesota gets its energy from does. No coal plant has a provision like this. No nuclear plant has a provision like this. No other hydro plants have a provision like this. So, yes, that was very much a topic of debate before the PUC.
Madam Chair, Mr. Swanson, do you agree that with the PUC that it has an interest in the NFA and the ongoing ability of the parties to that treaty to use the treaty and the related processes to address environmental and socioeconomic harms done by Manitoba Hydro? This was in the order, 2001 order from the PUC.
Madam Chair, Senator, the PUC in that order, that I'm assuming that you're reading from the 2001 order approving the 500-megawatt sale from Manitoba to XL. They, in that order, required the report that Mr. Evans was speaking of in XL's following resource plan. And XL did gather a wealth of information that provided a three-ring binder that's about 2.5 inches thick, as I recall it, sitting on my desk in my office, of information they gathered on that. After that report, the commission then determined XL had fulfilled its obligation and did not enact ongoing obligations on XL. So there is a more recent discussion from the commission as well.
So, Madam Chair, Mr. Swanson, you agree that Minnesota has an interest in these issues?
Madam Chair, Senator, no, I don't think that's what I said. I the commission's order, of course, will speak for itself, and the commission can speak for itself. Certainly the concern of Manitoba Hydro, and as I understand it, the concern that's been expressed by the province and by the Council General, is that there is a process in place in Canada for resolution of these disputes, and we would ask the state of Minnesota to respect that Canadian process, just as we think you would want Canada to respect Minnesota processes.
Okay, maybe I should rephrase, Madam Chair, Mr. Swanson. Do you agree that Minnesota has stated that it has an interest in these issues?
Madam Chair, Senator, I'm sorry, I don't have the commission order in front of me, but I believe that you accurately read from the commission order.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Senator Torres-Ray.
Madam Chair, I just have a comment about Mr. Swanson's testimony. I hope I heard that correctly. I'm just concerned about many of these agreements that we will make in the future between countries, where when we make the agreement and we look at the economic impact, everybody's in agreement. But then when we look at environmental issues and community issues, then one country is one country, another country is another country, and then we cannot work it out. So I just want to make a comment. I just heard Mr. Swanson's words. This is a Canadian company and the Canadian agreements, but when we made the deal, this was between the U.S. and Canada. So I think that's important for us, because in the future we're going to be making a lot of these agreements. And so when do we cross the line is an important question.
Mr. Swanson, let me just ask, the questions that are listed in these three provisions in the House language, do you think that if this information were provided to Minnesotans, that it would somehow change or jeopardize Xcel's ability, you think the answers to the question would undermine public support for these contracts with Manitoba Hydro?
Madam Chair, that's not the basis of the concern. If we look at the provisions one by one, the median household income and number of residents employed full-time and part-time in the five NFA signatory communities and the addition of South Indian Lake, that isn't information that Manitoba Hydro has. If that's information available, it would be available through the federal government, through census information to the extent that it's provided by the First Nations. On the outstanding claims, that is information Manitoba Hydro has if it's claims under the NFA. The amount of shoreline damage, that's subject to ongoing dispute as to what has been caused by the project, what is a result of natural forces, what's been adequately restored, what hasn't been. And there have been a number of arbitrations under the NFA related to exactly those issues. So the concern is we'll be litigating those issues, for example, on shoreline damage. If that information were gathered and provided, I'm certain that there would be disputes on that information. And then the Public Utilities Commission, perhaps, unclear how. To what end is the information being provided? Are we going to resolve here whether or not shoreline really was damaged by the project as opposed to natural forces? Are we going to resolve here whether or not there's been adequate restoration and cleanup? So it's more that we will be essentially relitigating potentially issues down here.
That's all. Thank you very much, Mr. Swanson. I don't have any other questions.
Thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you. All right, members, we need to set this issue aside for now. It obviously is going to take a little more discussion. I'd like to, if we could, try to go through and adopt as many of the provisions in the energy section that we're able to, so we can at least get some things done and move on to what the remaining issues are. So maybe we should go back to where we left off before Senator Dill's motion and then see if there's other pieces. I think the last thing we adopted was the hydrogen bill. Is that right?
Yes.
No, we haven't adopted that.
Yeah, we did.
Yes, we did.
Yeah, sections 9 and 10 on through page R207.
And then what's next after that? 7?
On R208, we've got language in the House updating the committee names on which committees are represented on the Legislative Electric Energy Task Force, and the House amends the expiration date of the task force to June 30th, 2008, while the Senate extends that to 2012.
Representative Hilty?
Madam Chair, as we discussed, I don't think there's any disagreement with the Senate on the language updating the structure of the task force. The only real disagreement, I think, would be on the expiration date or the extension of the date. And I think, as we discussed yesterday, or whenever that was, some interest just in splitting the difference and making the extension until 2010. Madam Chair, if I'm reading all this correctly, I would move to in the House language to strike 2008 and insert 2010, and with that change, move adoption of the House language in Section 11.
Okay, we're on the top of page R208, Section 11 and 12. Representative Hilty moves adoption of those with the incorporating the date change. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Excellent. Okay. I'm open for motions. Okay. Next provision?
At the bottom of that page, Madam Chair, is the language pertaining to the clean energy resource teams. Continues on page 209.
Okay, Madam Chair, while the Senate doesn't have a position on that, I think the Senate would be in agreement with the language, which merely establishes in statute the existence of the clean energy resource teams that have, of course, been in existence. And, I would move adoption of that language as well.
Okay. Is there... I had brought up the issue of the faith-based groups. I think that's something that needs a little more discussion, and we did have clarification that the department believes that they would be eligible to apply under this language. So I think I would support the House position to put this in statutory language. Is there any discussion on the motion to adopt Section 13? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion prevails.
Section 14 on page 210 is the Rural Wind Energy Development Revolving Loan Fund. There are some small language differences in the House language on page or on line 177.4. Just the reference includes subdivision 2, paragraph F. And in subdivision 3, the House language has the language make loans, whereas in the Senate language it's provide with loans. The only difference in substance is on lines 60.30 and 31 of the Senate language. The commissioner may pay reasonable and actual cost of administering a loan program not to exceed interest earned on fund assets. That's not in the House language.
Members, I would suggest we adopt the Senate language. I believe that language, that additional, Mr. Bull is nodding his head, that was requested by the department, and we've agreed to all the language. Representative Knuth, this is your bill. Is that?
Madam Chair, I'm fine with having that sentence. I just would ask for counsel if having the subdivision 2 paragraph F makes a substantive difference in terms of identifying the projects. I would ask for advice on that.
Well, it makes it more explicit and reduces possible misinterpretations.
Well, we could certainly incorporate both. So if someone wants to make them, I can't make the motion in the chair. If someone would like to move it, adoption of the Senate language with the exception of subdivision 2, the House can adopt the Senate or the House language on subdivision 2.
I'll make that motion.
All right. Representative Genius moves. Does that make
it?
Is there anything else?
Madam Chair, the subdivision 2 paragraph F is in both subdivision 2 and subdivision 3 of the language.
Sorry, I said that too quickly. So it's not that simple.
Well, Madam Chair, if the only difference is that one sentence, maybe what we should do is move to incorporate that sentence in the House language and adopt the House language.
That's fine. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I would make that motion
Representative Wiggini has already made a motion, so let's just have her amend her motion.
Yes, I'm just going to take my previous motion. I'll remove my previous motion and make a new motion that we adopt Section 14 with the addition of the Senate language on line 60.3 and 60.31.
Very good. Does everyone understand that motion? Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Thank you. Mr. Eloff?
Okay. Section 15 on R-211 is part of a number of provisions that expands the eligibility for projects receiving renewable energy production incentives from the RDF fund. At the top of page 212, this provision would allow a qualified landfill gas recovery facility to receive those payments.
I think because we don't have any Senate bill on this, I think we need to set this aside for now and learn a little bit more about it.
And Madam Chair,
Representative Hilty?
I will, at the appropriate time, have a motion about this section of the.
Okay, basically the same language at the top of R213 or the same substance there, allowing the landfill gas recovery facilities to receive those incentive payments. And beginning in the middle of page 213, there's a created a new program for on-farm biogas recovery grants, which are paid for from the RDF fund. And that language extends to the top of page 215.
And then there's the next section, I think, is also, there's two more. I think the all the way to 216, is that all part of the same bill?
It's all provisions that I think were in Representative Westrum's 2246.
And as I, none of those had a Senate companion, so I guess I'd like to set all those sections aside for now. Let's have a little more discussion on the Senate side.
Then on page 216, at the bottom, the Rural Wind Energy Development Program, there are a number of language differences, actually mostly on page 217, but there is a significant substantive difference. If you look at the House language on page 216, line 183.15, it restricts the program to provide assistance to seabed projects, essentially projects that meet Section 216B.1612, Subdivision 2, Paragraph F, which is defines what a seabed project is. The Senate language does not have a similar restriction.
Okay. I think we'll have to have more discussion about that. I didn't realize that was in the House language, so I think Representative Smith and I need to talk that over. This is my bill in the Senate.
On page 218, in the middle of the page on the Senate side, there's $500,000 in fiscal year 2008 for additional home heating assistance.
Okay, that's really a money issue, so I think we'll defer that.
Okay. And at the bottom of that page on the House side, requires Commissioner of Labor and Industry and Commerce and other agencies to make recommendations regarding uniform codes and standards as hydrogen infrastructure becomes available and fuel cell technology. And on page 219, section 23 provides that hydrogen refueling station grants can also be used for other promising renewable hydrogen production systems. And finally, Section 24 at the bottom of page 219 provides that the Commissioner of Commerce shall convene a group of stakeholders to evaluate the feasibility for off-site renewable distributed generation.
Representative Hilty?
Madam Chair, as far as I'm aware, there isn't any disagreement about these provisions. And, you know, unless they're some of which I'm unaware, I would move adoption of sections 22, 23, and 24, the House side.
Representative Hilty, I'm in agreement with that, and I haven't heard of any objection to those either. Is there any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Thank you.
On the top of page 220, this provision requires the PCA, DNR, and the Environmental Quality Board to report to the legislature on the process of issuing permits for biofuel production facilities. And I think we discovered that the Senate File 1312 had similar provisions in them. Mm-hmm. Although Representative Wagini has pointed out, and I don't know if we have the answer to this for sure, that on line 185.26, the phrase reduce the groundwater needed for production, I don't know if we're sure that that's in the Senate language.
Senator Chaudhry, is this your bill, Senate Bill 1312, the omnibus
Chair,
bill?
Chair, yes, but I do not recall that particular provision, and we can check. There's a difference.
Okay.
Is there an objection?
Do you want to...
We're talking about paragraph 2?
Section, yeah, paragraph 2.
I'm looking at line 185.26 on page 220.
Okay, I think we're going to wait on that a moment. No, no.
You also have the word fee in here.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay. I think there's a couple of small word differences, so we'll have to look at that and come back to this.
Okay. Next on page 220 is the study of terrestrial carbon sequestration and geologic carbon sequestration potential in the state of Minnesota, with monies going to the DNR and the Minnesota Geologic Survey to do those studies. The language on 220, 221, and the top of 222 is identical.
All right. Would anyone like to move? Representative Hansen moves adoption of the House position then.
Yes.
If you'd like. Or the Senate position, whichever you choose.
I think I should move the Senate.
All right. I think you should. Sure. We'll count one in the Senate column for a change. Yeah. Any discussion? And this is sections 2, 3, and 4, correct?
Yes.
All right. On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails.
The bottom of page 222 are identical provisions for monthly reports from utilities on certain matters dealing with disconnections and reconnections. That language is similar on page 222 and to the bottom of page 223, section 1.
I think it's the same members, and all of these provisions, I believe, on low-income heating assistance and related issues have all been worked out over a period of many, many months. They were all worked out a year ago, and here they are finally in front of us, so I think there's not much controversy about this. So would someone like to move adoption of Section 1?
I'll move adoption of Section 1.
All right. Which?
Senate provisions.
All right. Representative Wagenius, motion. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, none. Motion prevails.
The very bottom of page 223, continuing on 224, propane pre-purchase program, that language is also identical.
All right. And this was passed again this year by the Senate. By Senator Rosen, I think, was the author this year. Would anyone like to move it?
Chair, I'll move.
All right. Senator Fredrickson moves adoption of the Senate Section 1, page 223 and 224. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails.
At the very bottom of 224, the cold weather rule for public utilities. And it's my understanding that there are differences between the House and Senate language, but the Senate language is recommended to be adopted.
We did pass that out, members. So if you can find it in front of you, we have the language that was passed on the Senate floor recently, which I haven't found yet. And it looks like it's Senate File 1857. Mm-hmm. So you all have that at your places. Okay, and this, I would ask members to accept the Senate language as we made some. This is like all of these related bills, it's a product of a lot of negotiation and compromise, and this was the latest version of changes that were requested by the Public Utilities Commission and the utilities working in cooperation with legal services. And so this language is the preferred language for all of those parties. And so if we move the adoption of the Senate language, that would be as passed in Senate File 1857. Senator Saxhog makes that motion. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Mr. Eloff?
On page 231, this is with respect to cold weather rule actions on the part of cooperative electric associations and municipal utilities. And the language on 231, 232, and the top of 233 are identical.
Representative Hansen moves that language. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails.
In the middle of page 233, changes to intervener compensation rules. Madam Chair, Mr. Elwood, who's been working with both the House and the Senate on this bill, has suggested two small amendments here.
Do you have
Can
those?
I discuss them? Yes. If we look at the Senate language on line 1.8, delete the first word and insert a nonprofit. And before the word individual on that same line, insert the word an.
Okay.
The other change is on page 234, on line 2.23 of the Senate language. Delete the word of if necessary and the comma, so that line would read proof of the organization's nonprofit tax exempt status.
Is that all the amendments?
That is all.
Okay, this is my bill that passed the Senate. It was also non it passed easily on the Senate floor, and I would certainly support these technical amendments. Does everyone understand the amendments? Can we incorporate them in a motion? Okay. Would someone care to make that motion?
I'll move.
On intervener compensation updates?
I'll move the Senate language with the incorporation of the three technical amendments.
All right. Is there any further discussion on this bill? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion prevails.
Bottom.
We should call this the Ron Elwood section of the bill.
Yeah.
He's been doing a lot of work on this for a long time.
Madam Chair, at the bottom of page 235, another section on low income affordability programs. The language on this page and at the top of page R236 is identical.
Okay. And this relates to targeting low income programs.
The utilities are required to have them.
To have affordability programs.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Senator, I'll move.
All right. Senator Fredrickson moves adoption of that section. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails.
Skipping over Manitoba Hydro and moving to page 237. I spoke with Mr. Elwood about this just now, and I think the agreement he and I came to is basically to accept the Senate language here with possibly one amendment. On line 3.21 in what's called Section 2 at the bottom, after the word shall, you might want to insert the word timely, which is what is in the House language. It's just calling on the commission to adopt rules to conform with the changes here above and with this entire section, and it's just telling them to do so in a timely fashion.
Ms. Baker?
That's fine. I just laughed because it seemed funny, but that's fine. That's
it's one of those things that probably doesn't hurt and may help.
Okay. Right. So does everyone understand what we're doing here, Section 2?
What's going on here? The The cold weather rule rewrite in the first section is what's in revisor's instruction here at the top, replacing 216B.096, which is in the language that we just adopted, and changing the reference from 216B.095, which is what it has been previous to this adoption. The repealer indicates that the cold weather rules are repealed. The reason for that is because much of the rule language was brought into the statute with what we just did. And at the bottom, this says that the rules that apply to intervener compensation do not apply to a gas or electric utility. Those rules are also used for intervener compensation for telephone cases, and we want to retain those for those cases, but not for these. And that's what that third piece is doing.
So this is part of that same bill?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Is it grammatical to say the Public Utilities Commission shall timely adopt rules?
Sounds it actually is.
It is technically grammatical. It's just a little.
Yes.
Okay. Well, then, fine.
Well, Madam Chair, understanding that, I'll move the senators with that.
All right.
Appropriate, timely, before, after shall.
Senator Fredrickson moves adoption of Section 2 with incorporating the amendment as recommended.
This is not what?
Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Motion prevails. What about the repealer sections or the revised? I don't know if we need those now. Are those?
That's not what
just happened.
Madam Chair, that.
Excuse
you were
me.
Including that, I believe, that the
repealer?
Sections to right, the repealer instruction. That's exact. The
oh,
revisor's
that was part
instruction
of it.
Is
I'm
exactly
sorry.
The same.
So these all and three of these sections were together.
Right.
Right.
Okay. Was that clear to everyone? Maybe I'm not sure if I said that correctly. I was just focusing at the last paragraph. But all three of these are from that same bill that we passed.
Right.
Right. They all, Madam Chair, match up sort of to Section 10, and the differences that were there have been worked out to our agreement.
Yes.
Okay, so,
so
for
the
record,
the same.
We were voting on Section 2, Section 3, and Section 2.
Yes.
Right. As long as everyone understands that, we're fine. All right. Good job, members. We finished a section, and we're going to recess.
Madam Chair.
Senator Chaudhry.
The biofuel permitting
yes.
report.
Yes, do you want to go back to that?
We looked at Senate File 1312. It does not have the groundwater language, although that would be fine with us.
Tell us the page again.
Oh, I'm sorry. R220. The Senate version has that the House does not have is that on 185.25 after rules, if we could insert fees, that would be helpful. That's the only other difference. We wanted to recommend study fees.
Okay, Senator Chaudhry, I think that was my amendment in the committee to recognize that we are looking at fees for this process in both bills, I believe.
Okay.
And so you would move the House language with the incorporation of that one-word amendment?
Yep.
Okay. Any discussion? Sure. Is everybody clear on where we are?
Madam Chair.
Senator Fredrickson.
Just structurally, could we put our fees after procedures? So we're talking about statute rules or procedures, which are all administrative, and then put fees after procedures?
I'm sorry, Senator Fredrickson, I didn't quite track your language.
Madam Chair, on 185.25, delete or and insert after procedures or fees.
Mm-hmm. Senator Chaudhry?
Okay.
You can incorporate that into... Okay. His motion. Procedures or fees. That's fine. All right. If there's no further discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Any other motions at this time? I think we're, given the hour, I guess we're going to ask senators to meet tonight to go over to discuss some items in the bill, and so I think we probably will go ahead and adjourn, even though I'm reluctant to, just because we have a lot of work to do. So we'll schedule tomorrow's meeting. I'll let Representative Wagenius talk about that for a moment. And members, just to remind you, you know, tomorrow is going to be a very long day trying to finish this. So if you have issues or questions with any provisions, try to work them out and talk to other legislators who have so you can try to reach a compromise, because we're just not going to have time to haggle over a lot of details to get this bill done by tomorrow night. And so eat your Wheaties and get lots of rest. And Representative Wagenius, do you want to announce tomorrow's meeting? Yes, but don't, couldn't we do that earlier than that? Okay, I'm going to start at 10. Do you think you'll have time on that one? Okay. All right. We're going to meet at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning.
Okay. House members would like to meet in my office at 7.
And senators in my office at 7, please.
In the morning?
Tonight.
Tonight. Yeah. 7 p.m. Yeah, not 7 a.m.
Never.
Which is worse.
I know.
With that, the meeting's adjourned.